Good morning. It is Monday, the 17th of August, and the desk has 2 days of reading stacked on it, because Sunday is dark and Monday absorbs the whole weekend. That turns out to have been a useful accident this time. Grab your coffee, four things, and they arrived out of order, but they sit together better than most Mondays manage. First up, the New York Times published a four-byline account on Sunday of how the Pentagon's ban on anthropic products has actually been enforced, and the sequence is worth walking through carefully, because the reporting is unusually specific. In mid-July, major defense contractors received a letter from the Air Force telling them that by the 1st of September, all software they use for weapons and control systems had to be free of products built by Anthropic, and that failing to comply would put their Pentagon business at risk. Within a month, those same contractors received a written update. The quote is, "At this time, you are not required to remove from your inventory Anthropic products or services that interface with Department of the Air Force systems and networks." A Pentagon official described that update as temporary and said the department-wide mandate to purge Anthropic remains absolute, and the letter itself warned the guidance could change again depending on how litigation goes. The origin of the break is now on the record, too. Pentagon officials say Anthropic came to them with 25 pages of restrictions on how the Claude for Government model could be used. Those 25 pages were eventually reduced to two conditions: no domestic surveillance of Americans, and no fully autonomous weapons operating outside human oversight. In a February meeting, Dario Amodei declined to drop them. The response from the defense secretary was that Raytheon does not dictate how its missiles are used, and that those decisions belong to government officials. The department then designated the company a supply chain risk. Officials now say close to 100% of military systems that once ran Claude for Government on classified networks have replaced it with other frontier models, and that Anthropic tooling has been removed from Maven, the system that analyzes intelligence and suggests targets. Then there is Mythos. Anthropic announced that model roughly 2 months after the dispute, and it is built specifically to find and exploit vulnerabilities in software. Senior officials at the National Security Agency argued that giving it up would amount to unilateral disarmament, and the agency has been permitted to run Mythos on an experimental basis, both testing American network defenses and probing adversary networks. For a brief period, the administration barred all foreign nationals from touching the model, including some of the engineers who built it, then reversed that 2 weeks later without explanation. Earlier this month, Frontier Lab executives were told new models will be reviewed by the government for bioweapon risk and for the ability to break into classified systems. That review exempts open-weight models. The estimate officials are working from is that China is 6 months or less behind on frontier models, though probably years behind on the semiconductors needed to train them. The director of the Central Intelligence Agency has said it would not be misplaced to describe these capabilities as akin to digital nuclear weapons. Moving on to our second story, which is the one I keep turning over, on the 6th of August, Science published the first complete functional genomes ever generated by a machine learning model. Brian High's group at Stanford asked to use their EVO2 genomic language model, Doctin trained on a corpus that included more than 2 million bacteriophage genomes, then narrowed it by fine-tuning and about 15,000 genomes from relatives of a much-studied phage called PhyX-174. With computational constraints and quality filters applied, the pipeline produced 302 candidate genomes. 17 could not be synthesized at all. Of the remaining 285, the overwhelming majority failed the most basic test any phage has to pass, which is infecting and killing bacteria. 16 were successfully rebooted from synthetic DNA into infectious particles. Delivered together as a cocktail, those 16 cleared strains of E. coli that had already evolved resistance to the natural template, which an equivalent mixture of natural phages could not do. What makes this week's write-up in IEEE Spectrum worth reading is the independent check Oliver Crook a computational biochemist at Oxford, analyzed the Stanford data and found the 16 viable genomes were on average about 97% identical to their template, and that placed on a family tree they fall inside existing phage diversity rather than branching away from it. His description was that these were brothers and sisters of the original virus, not organisms behaving in a fundamentally new way. Samuel King, the first author, pushed back on sequence identity as the only measure. Several of the designs differ in three-dimensional protein structure, in growth kinetics, and in infection dynamics. One carried an unusually truncated protein that packs DNA into new viral particles borrowed from an evolutionarily distant phage and made to work on the PhyX-174 backbone by rewiring the surrounding sequence. An analogous gene swap had previously been shown to be non-viable when introduced by conventional genetic engineering. Scale is what bounds this for now. These are small genomes, about 5,400 DNA letters and 11 genes. HiE estimates the DNA synthesis alone would have cost between $100,000 and $200,000 at market rates, and he is direct that every virus needs its own optimized rebooting conditions, that it would take a very talented interdisciplinary team, and that nobody yet understands well enough how model-proposed genetic changes translate into pathogenicity. Biosecurity researchers at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, writing in an accompanying commentary, put the question this way. It is no longer whether generative viral genome design will exist, but whether oversight can be built fast enough. And the constructive reading from Chase Beisel at the Butner Institute is that the value here is not conjuring organisms unlike anything in nature. It is searching combinations of genetic changes that evolution never produced and that no scientist would think to test. Third up, and this one is about who owns the middle of the stack. Bloomberg reported Sunday that Stripe has finalized a deal to acquire OpenRouter for more than $7 billion, and the information confirmed it independently. The number is the whole story. OpenRouter raised a Series B of $113 million in May at a reported valuation of $1.3 billion, with Sequoia, Andreessen Horowitz, Menlo Ventures, and Alphabet's Capital G on the cap table. That is better than a five-fold markup in about 3 months. The Wall Street Journal had reported talks last month. Stripe says it does not comment on rumors or speculation. OpenRouter is an inference gateway. Developers point one interface at it and route requests across more than 400 models from competing providers, choosing per task on capability, latency, and price. The company claims 8 million users. Its chief executive has described the product as Stripe for AI, on the theory that a single integration that prevents provider lock-in is structurally the same business as a single integration that prevents payment processor lock-in. Stripe evidently agreed with the analogy enough to buy it. What makes the price defensible is position rather than technology. A router sits between application developers and every frontier lab, which means it sees demand elasticity across models in a way no individual lab does, which prompts migrate when something cheaper appears, how quickly a new release takes share, what fraction of traffic is price sensitive rather than capability bound. That is exactly the data a payments company knows how to monetize, and it pairs naturally with metering and billing for products priced in tokens. Stripe already handles the money for a large share of AI startups. Now it owns the meter as well as the ledger. And for our fourth and final story today, Cursor announced on Friday that its acquisition has closed and it is now formally part of SpaceX. The path was unusual, even by this year's standards. In April, the two announced a joint technology deal that also handed SpaceX an option to acquire Cursor for $60 billion. 2 months later, as SpaceX went public, both sides said they were exercising it. Ish, SpaceX had already absorbed Musk's AI lab earlier this year, so the combined entity now holds a launch business, a frontier lab, and the most widely adopted AI-native code editor, What is striking is how much of Cursor's announcement is about compute rather than product. It points repeatedly at SpaceX infrastructure, which the company has been renting to outside customers, including Anthropic and Google, and claims Cursor will now have access to the largest fleet of graphics processors in the world. The framing offered was that SpaceX is building the computing capacity needed to scale intelligence far beyond what exists today, and that Cursor will be one place where that intelligence becomes useful. That is an unusual thing for an editor company to lead with, and it tells you what the deal is for. Coding agents are the highest volume, longest context, most inference-hungry consumer product anyone has shipped, and owning both the harness and the silicon changes the economics of running them. It also changes the competitive geometry, because Cursor has always depended on third-party models routed per request, which left it exposed to the labs whose models it resells. The countervailing risk is trust. Anthropic and Google are now simultaneously suppliers, competitors, and tenants on the same compute. The infrastructure story has a tail, too. SpaceX is facing a lawsuit over pollution from the gas turbines powering its data centers, and it committed $16.8 billion with Tesla earlier this month to start building a chip factory in Texas. Every one of those four is a story about a choke point, a Defense Department deciding which model may sit inside a weapons system and discovering it wants the one it banned, a payments company buying the switchboard that every application talks through, a launch company buying the editor and the electricity underneath it, and a laboratory in Palo Alto demonstrating that the ability to write a working genome is now a fine-tuning job, with the people closest to the work saying plainly that the oversight for it does not exist yet. Three of those choke points changed hands over a weekend. The fourth is the one nobody owns. There are 90 items in the full digest today. If you only read one more, make it the archive paper on verifier-induced support reshaping, which shows that reinforcement learning with verifiable rewards can improve the objective in front of it while driving the behaviors a later training stage needs so rare they can no longer be sampled. Sequential post-training stages are not independent, and that is going to bite somebody expensively. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, notice who is standing where the traffic has to pass.